With President Donald Trump's all but certain acquittal by the Senate dominating the news cycle late over the weekend, one big story flew under the radar. On Friday, 3 years after he first announced his controversial travel ban, President Trump expanded it to include six new countries: Nigeria, Eritrea, Tanzania, Sudan, Kyrgyzstan, and Myanmar. The original travel ban barred almost all immigrants and travelers to the U.S. from seven majority Muslim nations, including Iran, Libya, and Yemen. It was met with widespread outrage at home and abroad, spurring massive protests at airports across the United States.
Hey, hey, JFK, no fascist USA, no hate, no fear.
This time around, immigrant communities are once again scrambling to understand how they'll be affected in the weeks and months ahead. But overall, the public response has been more muted. Under the expanded ban, the U.S. will stop issuing visas that would lead to permanent residency for nationals of countries like Myanmar and Nigeria, while also suspending diversity visas to those from Sudan and Tanzania. When the expanded ban goes into effect later this month, the total number of countries affected will be 13. And though the original ban was challenged in the courts, the Supreme Court ultimately upheld it in June of 2018. Joining me now is Faiza Patel, co-director of the Brennan Center's Liberty and National Security Program. Faiza, thanks for coming back on the program.
My pleasure.
And also with us is Nicole Narea, immigration reporter for Vox. Nicole, hi.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Faiza, have you been bracing for this expansion?
Yes, I mean, there have been news reports for the last several weeks that an expansion was coming, and obviously it was the third anniversary of the Muslim ban early last week, so we were expecting that something would come out around this time, and that's exactly what happened.
So how was this expansion consistent with or distinct from the earlier set of countries?
So the consistency is the use of a national security pretext as a blunt instrument to keep out large numbers of people, mostly from Muslim countries and African countries. It is clearly targeted at certain populations that this administration doesn't like and doesn't want to have in this country. And when you look at the rationale for the ban in the proclamation, which formalized it, it's quite similar to what we saw when the final reports around the Muslim ban were actually done, which is that they take these very sort of neutral-seeming criteria, such as, you know, cooperation with the U.S., whether or not a country issues electronic passports, whether it reports lost and stolen passports to Interpol, and then they apply them selectively because there's loads of countries in the world, including countries like China and India, which don't meet those criteria, but they just pick, you know, these six or seven.
Well, we've seen a Nigerian-American, Karen Atia, at the Washington Post, who tweeted out, "Nigeria being added to Trump's travel and immigration restriction list has nothing to do with religion, national security, or logic, or sane foreign policy. Remember when Trump said that once Nigerians see the U.S., they would, quote, never go back to their huts? It's about racism." Do you agree with her?
Absolutely. And I think what it's about is also overstay rates, right? So this administration is very concerned about people overstaying their non-immigrant visas. Nigeria actually has a fairly high rate of overstays on Nigerian citizens coming to the U.S. And that's why it's actually particularly odd, because if you're worried about overstay rates, why are you restricting immigrant visas, which have nothing to do with overstay rates? It's just another demonstration of the lack of logic behind this.
Explain this distinction you're making.
Sure. So for a long time, one of the big concerns of this administration and previous administrations, for that matter, is that people will come to the U.S., say, on a tourist visa or some kind of other short-term visa, and then they'll overstay. They'll stay back. They might start working. They might enter into a relationship, et cetera. And that's, you know, one of the big components of people who are here with that documentation. And Nigeria is one of the countries that does have a fairly significant overstay rate. And that reason was given by sort of anonymous administration officials along the way. But if you're concerned about, you know, non-immigrants staying on, then restricting immigrant visas, which is what this ban does, so people who want to move here mostly to be with family or to take up a job, doesn't really make any sense because it doesn't deal with the overstay problem.
Nicole, it was pretty surprising to see Nigeria on the list. I mean, it is a very big country, close to 200 million people. It's also been a U.S. ally in the fight against terrorism, correct?
Yeah. Nigerians also make up a huge population of African immigrants living in the U.S. They're numbering some 327,000 in the U.S. But yeah, they have been a partner to the U.S. in counterterrorism efforts on the ground against Boko Haram. So it's sort of confusing as to why the Trump administration would try to penalize Nigeria for working with their U.S. counterparts to combat domestic homegrown terrorism.
Tell us more about what you know about the Nigerian diaspora. They are, to my mind, they are highly educated and fairly high income here in America, correct?
Yeah, yeah. They're among some of the most successful immigrants in the U.S. The cities that have some of the largest populations include Dallas, Chicago, Baltimore, Atlanta, Phoenix, and Houston. And Houston actually has the largest Nigerian population outside Brazil and Africa. Every year, the U.S. does grant Nigerians significant numbers of green cards. In 2018, it was almost 14,000. By comparison, citizens from the other countries that are included in this expansion of the travel restrictions were granted a combined total of less than 6,000. So these restrictions really are having an outsized effect on Nigerians, many of whom have family back in Nigeria and might be tempted to bring them over to the U.S. And reunite. But now that won't be feasible under these new restrictions.
So we're talking about a lot of skilled workers here in the U.S. who will be affected by this?
Yes, absolutely. Most of these people who are able to obtain green cards are working in the workforce. They're, skilled workers. They're being granted H-1B visas, which are for particularly skilled workers, oftentimes in technology fields. So, this is definitely going to affect skilled immigration, legal immigration, in a way that the Trump administration hasn't exactly communicated.
How is this being received by Nigerians here in the U.S.?
I think there's just an overwhelming sense of why me, especially because Nigerians are actively contributing to U.S. society and there is a huge diaspora in the U.S. They find that these travel restrictions are kind of being arbitrarily applied to Nigeria because many other countries that aren't included on the new list would have some of the same national security failings that Nigeria has. So it really does feel like a targeted restriction and one that's discriminatory. And that's why a lot of immigrant advocates are now calling this an African ban.
Faiza, what do you make of the timing of this announcement?
Well, I mean, the timing's not a coincidence. I think, it's interesting to me that, we sit and we analyze, the little pieces of this ban and the justifications that they gave. But this ban is just a messaging ban in some sense for this administration, right? It comes on the heels of, the 3-year anniversary of the Muslim ban. It's telling the president's supporters, look, I'm keeping black and brown people out of the country. It's, an election year, obviously. And this is, I think, him delivering on his anti-immigrant agenda for his supporters.
So there are no countries that are, predominantly non-brown, meaning white countries that have been affected by these bans, correct?
None. In fact, Belarus was floated as being an additional country that would be in this version of the ban, but in the end, it wasn't there. So it was the usual suspects in a way.
What are we hearing from the people in leadership in these countries that are targeted by expansion? I mean, is the leadership in Nigeria or Eritrea, are they fighting this?
Well, certainly the Nigerian government has been quite vocal about saying, look, we didn't even expect this to happen. We had no idea we would be on this ban, which is really interesting because the State Department has said, and it's reflected in the document, that they had extensive consultations with officials from all of these countries before, in order to give them an opportunity to improve the situation before they implemented this. And that's clearly at odds with what the Nigerian government is saying. I think you have to also understand that, most countries are not in a strong position vis-a-vis the United States. They want a lot from the U.S. This is one piece of what they want. Nigeria, obviously, is a large and populous country, and it can actually say something. I'm not surprised that we're not hearing more from other countries because these are fairly small countries which don't have a huge ability to stand up to the United States.
Now, we heard earlier in the segment the audio of people flooding JFK Airport, protesting the original travel ban. But of course, the Supreme Court did decide in Trump administration's favor. Is there a sense that basically this is sort of settled matter?
So I mean, to be clear, what the Supreme Court did was to say that the injunction against the travel ban was not upheld, right? So it had been enjoined by the lower courts. That is to say that they said you can't implement this. And that does require a preliminary review of whether or not it is constitutionally valid. And the Supreme Court said, no, you can't enjoin this ban because we're not that clear that it's unconstitutional. The litigation against the Muslim ban is continuing. In fact, just last week, we had oral argument in the Fourth Circuit down in Richmond, Virginia on the ban. So that's definitely still a somewhat open issue.
So could this new expansion affect those proceedings?
I don't think so, not directly at least, because that is about a particular presidential proclamation and it's about a particular policy. But I think the important thing here is that we shouldn't be relying on the courts again and again to block the Trump administration, because one of the things we see is that oftentimes the lower courts, the trial courts and the appellate courts have been a pretty good wall against some of his most outrageous moves. But when we get to the Supreme Court, we've lost several times. So I think it's really important for Congress to step up to the plate over here. I understand that, you know, there is a bill called the No Ban Act, which would actually reverse the Muslim ban and make it more difficult for the president to take these kinds of arbitrary decisions in the future. And it has the support of almost every Democrat in the House. And I believe a vote is scheduled on that within the next week or two.
Nicole, we do have to wrap up pretty soon, but do you expect protests along the lines of what we saw at JFK 3 years ago to be playing out in the coming days?
I think, unfortunately, people's ability to have outrage is limited under the Trump administration. We really just haven't seen protesters coming out against Trump administration immigration policies since really the separation of immigrant families. So I'm not really anticipating that among everything else that's happening with impeachment and now with the primary starting, there's unfortunately intention on a lot of other news events and not on this development.
Nicole Narea is an immigration reporter for Vox, and Faiza Patel is the co-director of the Brennan Center's Liberty and National Security Program. Thank you both for joining us today.
Thanks.